The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Thanks very much to Catherine Thomas for sitting in yesterday. You're going to ask me how I am? I'm not the best, really. You don't care. I know you don't care. You don't care. I'm having one of those days. I brought the soup back over from the canteen and spilt it all over my desk. Like the whole lot. The other way, sometimes you just get it in time and there's just a little drop of it. No, it was the whole thing, all over the desk, keyboard, the whole lot. Mess. So I finally cleaned that up with the help of Siobhan and Niamh and everybody else up there. And then I went in to get something for after lunch and I got one of those, you know, those little pots of yogurt with the compote at the top or the bottom and then the granola on the top, and sitting there at the desk, and I sort of knew what was going to happen because I was desperately trying to get the top off, and then it came off in a flourish and a bit of a mini explosion, yogurt all over my trousers, granola all over the floor. The only one of those days, you've probably had them yourself, and they say it comes in threes, so anything could happen between now and 4:30 today. We are planning to have Joanne McNally on, the comedian. Esther Ranson, Dame Esther Ranson, will be on after 4:00. And we've live music from Ham Sandwich. And speaking of food stuff, if you're interested in knowing what the various Christmas fare, what sort of calories they take or add on to you, we'll be telling you about that as well. Isn't it? I know I wasn't here yesterday, but I have to say it. Mullin Yachta. Mullin Yachta. Everybody is relishing in saying the word. There's something musical about it. Mullin Yachta. Something very Irish about it. Peter McGivney. He's the father of the centre forward, James McGivney. And everybody wants to know, how did they do it? They were not even a parish, but a half parish. And they went on to be Kilmacud Crokes, one of the most successful and wealthiest clubs in the country. I know, because they're my local club. Well, he reckons it stems from a baby boom in the mid-1990s. There was a spike in the number of baby boys born in the village of Mullin Yachta. And from then on, it was just fate and a lot of hard work. He says, ever since these lads learned to walk, they were put onto a pitch and have always proved they were a force to be reckoned with. We could see that there were a good few talented lads in St. Columbus, and that was the national school that was featured on the news. I knew for years that we'd soon have a very strong panel down the line. You know, people were saying, is it the diet? Is it something in the water? What's happening? And remember that guy, Matthew Saeed, wrote a brilliant book called Bounce, where a number of table tennis champions came from the same area of a city in England. And he was trying to figure out what happened there. Well, he might be coming and studying Mullin Yachta, and he'll have to talk to Peter McGivney. So, well done, lads. Well done, lads. It continues ad nauseum. The old Brexit thing. Just when you thought you've had enough, they'll pile more Brexit stuff on top of you. Everybody must be tiring of it, but particularly poor Theresa May. I wonder, does she ring David Cameron and say, that's another fine mess you've got me into? Does she? Has she had words with David Cameron? I'm sure she has about the whole thing and why did he put it to a vote, and he was sure that everybody would say remain, remain, remain when the majority said exit, exit, exit. Anyway, something you won't know from the various current affairs programmes that you may have been listening throughout the day, Sean O'Rourke and Morning Ireland, is how Theresa May copes with stress. And she is going through an awful lot of stress these days. Do you want to know? You do want to know, yeah. She goes to the cupboard and she takes out a tub of peanut butter. And she eats spoonfuls of the peanut butter direct from the tub or the jar. It's catering. A catering-sized tub she needs now. She also disclosed that she relaxes by watching the BBC's MasterChef The Professionals. You'd have to wish her well. She's in nearly an impossible situation, isn't she? Still on politicians, well, it is, yeah, it is, yeah. The wisecrack of the year, as in the Christmas cracker joke of the year for 2018, goes to Michael Hughes. And here is his joke. What does Donald Trump do after he pulls a cracker? Pays her off. Ba-dum-tsh. And Michael Hughes got €1,659 towards a holiday as a prize for coming up with that. Still on Brexit, you know, there's loads of talk about how it's affecting various things or may affect various things in this country if there's a no deal exit from the European Union for Great Britain. Chips. Anybody for chips? It'll affect the cost of chips because we import, despite the fact that we are famed for growing our own spuds, we import an inordinate amount of potatoes from the UK because we like our chips a certain way. And the potatoes we grow in this country aren't the perfect potatoes for chips. So Marquis or Maris Piper are the varieties grown on the east coast of Britain, and they have been specially stored at a certain temperature to ensure the sugar content remains low. And seemingly Irish potatoes are stored at cooler temperatures, which results in more of the carbohydrate being converted into sugars, which means they don't fry well and they don't make good chips. We did this back in the day. We tested four or five potatoes to see which made the best chip. And it was the Maris Piper came out on top, crispy on the outside, fluffy on the inside. And delicious chips. Can I have a plate of chips, please? Yes. Yeah, vinegar. Thank you very much. And salt. Thank you. So that will affect us. You would wonder, knowing that there was a market for these potatoes, why Irish potato growers don't grow Maris Pipers. The world's oldest fake Christmas tree. I was down in a shop recently and the man said, we don't call them fake, we call them artificial. So we'll say artificial. Elizabeth Naylor purchased a 2-foot tree in Woolworths in England back in 1920, just 2 years after the First World War, which would make the tree 98 years old this year. Eventually it was called William's Tree after Elizabeth's son, who died prematurely 20 years later. And it's gone down three generations. So it was passed on from Elizabeth to Joyce, her daughter. And then when Joyce passed on in 2012, she passed it on to Kay, her daughter, and they still have it there. So a 98-year-old artificial tree they're claiming is the oldest in across the water. I wonder, have we got an artificial tree or a fake tree that's older than that? Anybody up in the attic in the sitting room? It would have to have been handed down and handed down and handed down. But if you have a tree older than that, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. We got a lovely email to that email address from Nuala King in the Mater Hospital in Dublin. She says, amazing Christmas appeal by Mater staff, 400 children's gifts donated and gifts for the elderly in our local community through St. Vincent de Paul. Thousands of nappies, wet wipes and baby formula for the Capuchin Centre too. Incredible staff effort. Well done, everyone. Amazing generosity. And that's the thing about Christmas. It brings out the best in us, doesn't it? And the charitable side and the generous side and the altruistic side, all of those things come to the fore at Christmas. And you do think to yourself, why can't we keep them to the fore for the rest of the year? Anyways, well done to Nuala and the staff in the Mater Hospital there. And it got us thinking, is there some festive good deeds that you're involved in? And I know I heard the ladies there who are making dinner in various places around the country for people who may be living on their own or people who are homeless. So that's one good deed. But in general, if there's good deeds that you want to shout about, tell us and we'll pass on to the rest of the country. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Catherine was in yesterday, as I said, and she was talking about making a Hames of the Christmas dinner. And we got, you know, not loads, but a good few emails overnight. I chose this one because it's a good one. It's a good one. Hiya Ray, no names if you read this out. The mammy will be mortified and this year's dinner might be abandoned. Captain Thomas mentioned earlier of making a Hames of Christmas dinners. It brought to mind a regular Christmas cracker that gets revisited every year around our table on the 25th. The year is 2010 or thereabouts. Christmas dinner and there is some taste a bit odd on the plates. Can't quite put the finger on it, but the dinner has something a bit, well, sterile about the whole affair. But it's Christmas Day and the mammy has been slaving over a hot stove for days, with some help, of course, so no one is going to be so rude as to mention it. But by St. Stephen's Day and leftover ham and turkey going into every meal, there's something still not quite right. But now you can actually narrow it down to individual pieces of food. No more heaped plate of delights. Now you can tell that it's certainly the ham. That's where the odd taste is coming from. And no more standing on ceremony. Brothers and sisters, start asking if anyone else has noticed. Everyone has. No one wanted to be the one to mention it yesterday, Christmas Day. So what could it be, ma'am? What did you do with the ham? Oh, nothing unusual. There's a bit of that honey on it. There's a bit of that honey on it. And down comes the honey from the press for examination. The Irish mammy, thrifty as ever, has picked up a big old litre of honey at a bric-a-brac sale somewhere or other. You see, there's the problem there. You do they sell litres of honey? All fancy and novelty, Winnie the Pooh tub no less. See attached for the gist. Sure, look at it there. There's no ingredients listed, but you know it must be honey because it does, after all, say H-U-N-N-Y on the front. So that's one corner cut for the dinner and the ham got generously basted in the stuff. But on closer post-Christmas examination, you mean this honey? Ma, you mean this honey that's blue, green with bubbles, honey, that honey? And that's the long and short of how we all ate Winnie the Pooh bubble bath with the Christmas dinner one year. That's a great story. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Now, let's see what you're saying. Sharon has been on to us from Philadelphia. Greetings from Philadelphia. Could you say hello to my parents, Mary or Marie and Patrick Rowan Tree in Glasnevin in Dublin? Hello to Marie and Patrick. Which is the most popular version of that? Is it Mary or Marie? I think Marie probably. Granola is breakfast. What were you thinking of? I know. You see, I thought that I wasn't functioning well, so I needed a little sugar hit. So that's why I went for the granola thing. No use crying over spilt milk, Ray. Could have been a pint of Guinness, says Eamon. And cut down on packaging. Now, Ray, your lunch sounds to me like you had a lot of packaging on your desk today. Think about bringing in your lunch and cutting down on all that packaging, says Kate. And drop soup, flying yogurt. I'd be very careful at dinner tonight, says Kevin in Westport. And did you know you're keeping good company? Elvis had one of those days. Did you ever get one of those days, boys? Did you ever get one of those days? 2 Mile House wins Leinster final. Ray, say hello to 2 Mile House, County Kildare. They won the Leinster finally this weekend. They're a tiny village in County Kildare, just outside Naas. I know where it is. I used to do discos in the hall there. We're the only County Kildare team to win any All-Ireland final. Great for a little village just outside Naas. Was it the intermediate or what was it? You must fill me in on that. Now, 51551, ray at rte.ie. Good afternoon. I'm after dropping my burrow there. 51551, ray at rte.ie. Please spare a thought for bankers and solicitors all over the country devoting time to good deeds. They usually keep them in the safe. It's Paul. And Irish growers do produce Mara's Piper, but the moisture content is much higher. The moisture burns off during cooking, leaving a much lower yield, says that person. And Mara's Pipers are available in Louth, thanks to Hickey's of RD. And Mara's Pipers also make by far the best Boxty. Happy Christmas, says Anne-Marie McKeown. We got the, I don't know when it's available in the shops, but they always make a big hoo-ha about presenting us with the Christmas RTE guide, the double edition. Essential 14-day bumper edition. And this year they've done a lovely thing in it, actually. There is a story illustrated by Marie-Louise Fitzpatrick throughout the RTE guide, one that you can read to your children. And when Christmas is over, maybe you might tear the pages out and keep it for next year. It's an original Christmas story and it's lovely. It's about the Rileys. And there's Hannah and Boo and Bailey the dog and Mammy and Daddy. And it's... 'Twas the night before Christmas, all the world was asleep. And the name of the book is We Can't Sleep! The Rileys can't sleep. And it takes them on what they have to do to finally get to sleep. And of course, you have to be asleep Christmas Eve before Santa comes or else he won't arrive. So that's lovely there. And it's free in, you know, it's throughout the RTE guide. Lovely idea, lovely idea. With all the hoo-ha about the Christmas songs, there's a letter, I'd say his tongue is firmly placed in his cheek. Raymond O'Loughlin. That's the Irish for Raymond. Raymond, it's a make-you-up thing. From Churchtown, Dublin 14. He says, Sir, as a committed environmentalist, I take very grave offence to Chris Rea's Driving Home for Christmas. The song promotes a mode of transport that is unsustainable and it should be banned. It's about time that Chris took the bus home for Christmas. Yours, etc. That's there. There's another one about Christmassy things. Connor Pope wrote about the evergreen toys last week, all the toys that have stood the test of time. And Dee Delaney writes, she says, further to evergreen toys appeal to the child and all of us. Subutio was a firm favourite in our house. It never ceased to amaze me the skill one needed to flick those little men around the pitch. My brothers were pure experts. We had many, many hours of pleasure playing the game. So it is lovely to see that it's still alive and kicking. Thank you for the memories. Dee, I'd say, you know, it's a niche sport now, is Subutio. what with all the, you know, the Xboxes and all that and FIFA, this and that and the other. Wasn't that part of that Undertone song, My Perfect Cousin? One of the lines was, he flicks the kick and I didn't know, wasn't it? My perfect cousin. Now, on Christmas songs, thanks for all your suggestions. They keep them coming in. It's an ongoing thing we have up on Spotify. If you have Spotify, we just have our Christmas playlist. It doesn't change that much from year to year because Christmas songs are Christmas songs. But it's nice to get suggestions of new ones. So who gave me this? The Al McCogan and... there, Eileen Lennon said you should include this one on your Christmas list.
You must never do a tango with an Eskimo. No, no, no. Oh dear, no. When a lady from Nebraska's at a party in Alaska, she must never do a tango with an Eskimo.
Should that be Inuit? Yeah. Simon was on to us. Mick Flannery featuring Kate Walsh. It featured already, but it's a great choice, Simon.
Don't go telling me lies, love. Tell me the truth, love. Tell me the truth, love. Cause that way I won't have to know, love. Won't have to see, love. Won't have to ask the ghost of Christmas past.
Mick Flannery and Kate Walsh in Christmas Past. And Carmel was on. She said, I love your Christmas playlist and use it at home and in work. At Luan, or could be Luan Boutique, where our customers ask about it over and over. Oh, do they? It's magic. May I suggest you add Paul Harrington's Switzer's Window? Didn't know about this, and the reason I didn't know about it is because it's relatively new. It's Paul Harrington on piano, and Patrick Bergen sings it, and it's a charity single for Bernardo's. Have a listen.
And we'd stand in the snow, and we'd stand in. Our faces pressed close to the cold window pane. But oh, it was magic so long ago. Christmas in Dublin at Switzer's window.
That's sort of nice, isn't it? Patrick Bergen. And John Sheehan features on that as well, The Dubliner, and Paul Harrington, and it's available to stream and download and all sorts of things, and all the proceeds go to Bernardo's, which is nice. And here's a version of White Christmas which you might like, which we've included, George Ezra's version.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas just like the ones I used to know.
His voice really suits that, doesn't it? And they're all on our Christmas list. I think there's nearly 4 hours of music now. The ultimate Christmas list. And if you go to Ray Darcy Show on Spotify, if you have it, it's there. And you can play it in the background when you're doing Christmassy type things. On Theresa May, she's as tough as Mrs. Thatcher, She's as tough as Mrs. Thatcher, but nicer, says Kath. And my prediction is that Brexit won't happen. Theresa will go, general election, new vote, and back to square one. Maybe she could do Strictly next year, says Emer. I was just reminding myself about the demographic of the vote, and we were going to do it on Friday. I can't remember why we didn't get around to it. But if you look at the ages and how they voted, between 18 and 24, the majority, I think it was over 75%, voted to remain. And then you go to the over 65s, and you look at the majority voted to go. And that was the difference. And the reason we were going to talk about it was there was a guy, it was a bit off the wall, but a guy in Cambridge or Oxford or one of those places was suggesting that the voting age should be 6. And he also suggested that maybe people, when they got to a certain age, shouldn't be allowed to vote because they were voting on things that wouldn't involve them. If you know what I mean. So, for example, if you're 80 or 90 and you're voting to exit the European Union, well, you won't be around to see the ramifications of exiting the European Union. So he had a question mark over whether you should be allowed to vote at all. I told you it was off the wall, it's out there, but that was his theory. On Christmas songs being offensive, I heard that George Michael's song Last Christmas, I Gave You My Heart, is offensive to vegans, says Julie. And on Good Deeds, a huge tradition and good deed event in Loughrea for Christmas Day is Loughrea Icebreakers Christmas Day Swim. It's at 11:30 a.m. Dozens of people from as young as six right up to men and women in their 70s take a running jump, raising much needed funds for Casa Loughrea. There's a DJ, hot drinks, fantastic atmosphere regardless of the weather. Huge shout out to all who take time on Christmas morning to be part of this good deed event. CASA is a voluntary organisation which provides a social outlet for people with disabilities, and the swim pays for these events in Loughrea. So that's nice. So that's the running jump, Loughrea, 11:30 Christmas morning. And it sets you up for the day, I would imagine. Sets you up for the day. 51551, ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or you can text 51551. Now, I was reading yesterday that the average adult in Ireland will gain over half a stone over Christmas. Professor Amanda Daly from Loughborough University is behind a study in conjunction with the University of Birmingham, which looked at tackling winter weight gain. So as many of us prepare to tuck into that 6,000 calories on Christmas Day, Amanda joins us on the line to share her findings. How are you, Amanda?
Hi, yeah, good, thank you. How are you doing?
Good, good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
Now, how did you do the study?
So we were interested in finding out whether we could stop people from gaining weight over Christmas, because we know that that's a key time when people gain weight. So we asked some people to weigh themselves twice a week, ideally every day, and we gave them some information about the calories in foods that we often eat and drink over Christmas. So we told them how many minutes of running and walking it would take to burn popular Christmas foods. And so we put those two things together and we tried to stop them gaining weight. And we found that if you do that, if you weigh yourself and you think about the calories in foods, it does stop you from gaining weight over Christmas.
Aha. Did you ask them if it took from the enjoyment of the whole thing?
We didn't ask them that, actually, and we don't want people to, you know, not enjoy themselves over Christmas. But the key thing, or the key message, was that we wanted people to demonstrate some restraint. And the reason why we wanted to do that is because, see, the weight that we gain over Christmas, we don't always lose it after Christmas. And year on year, Christmas after Christmas, that can have an impact on our health.
Yeah.
So our view was, let's prevent it in the first place from going on, and then you don't have to worry about it after Christmas.
And people are shocked, really, when they hear what you have to do to work off 6,000 calories, aren't they? So
I think it's
100 calories a mile, is it, of running? So that's 60 miles you'd have to run.
Well, yeah, I mean, on average, it's about 10 minutes of running is about 100 calories of energy, give or take. People don't often realise how many calories and how much exercise you actually have to do to burn off all those foods that we eat over Christmas.
Okay, say 5 chocolates. What would you have to do to burn off 5 chocolates?
5 chocolates is about 25 minutes of running.
Right.
Yeah, it's a long way.
A mince pie?
A mince pie is about 21 minutes of running.
Just one little mince pie?
Well, it depends on the size of the mince pie. But if we go on the average size of a mince pie, it's about 20 minutes.
I like mine with a dollop of cream on top as well.
You have to put an extra spurt at the end of your run then to burn off the cream.
Yeah. Okay, 3 roast potatoes.
3 roast potatoes is probably around 15, 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, of walking.
A slice of roast turkey.
Yeah, a slice of roast turkey is about, that's not too bad actually, that's about 8 minutes of running and 16 minutes of walking, so you're okay with the turkey.
Yeah, but that's a, you know, like if you're an okay runner, that's a mile, you have to run a mile for one slice of roast turkey, then you're not going to have just one, you're going to have three, and you're not going to have 3 roast, but you're going to have 5 because it's Christmas Day.
So basically the study was really about, you know, we're not trying to stop people having a good time on Christmas Day, but we just wanted people to maybe just cut back a little bit and restrain a little bit. But it's not just about Christmas Day, it's about the whole Christmas period, because obviously Christmas period involves, you know, lots of days, which involves lots of eating and lots of drinking. So it's not just about that single Christmas Day, it's about the whole Christmas period.
So on a serious note, it is about being, and this is a word that's been overused at the moment, but it's important here, to be mindful about what you eat. So in the intervention group, you obviously, by weighing yourself, you're aware of your weight, and then by being aware of how much it takes to work off certain foodstuffs, you're just more mindful, aren't you?
Yeah, so we just wanted to sort of raise people's awareness about the number of calories that were in food and just be mindful about the amount of food that they were consuming. And also drinks. We mustn't forget drinks are also, part of this as well. And just to demonstrate a little bit of restraint and just cut back a little bit. So rather than having five roast potatoes, maybe just have two or three. Maybe you have two or three drinks rather than four or five drinks. So, yeah, it wasn't about not having a good time. It was just being aware.
Do you know what we should do on the show here? We should get the key things, right, and do up a nice little A4 page with a picture of the food stuff and then a picture of the activity and how much you have to do beside it. And then people can print it off and put it up in their kitchen in the fridge or something, on the fridge. How about that?
An excellent idea. And that's kind of what we did in the study as well. We gave people a leaflet. A leaflet, and we gave them information about the popular foods just so they could see and think about whether the food was actually worth the cost of the amount of activity that it would require to expend it. Is it worth eating 25 chocolates? Is it worth eating 15 roast potatoes because of the amount of exercise or activity it takes to burn it off afterwards?
Okay, we'll point people towards this interview as a podcast that they can listen to when they're doing the cooking and the eating over Christmas, yeah. Okay, Amanda Daly, Professor Amanda Daly from Loughborough University. Thanks for talking to us today. Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, thanks, Em. Bye-bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or ray at rte.ie. Christmas list. Is Brian Kennedy on your list? He is. Christmas morning. It's a beautiful song. Brendan from Beddystown. If you haven't heard that song, go and look for it. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Yes, it's there too. That's one of my favourites. Want a hippopotamus for Christmas. And Christmas calories. Wow, the mystery prevails. How come a half a pound box of chocolates can make you gain a stone in weight? And even if I started running straight after Christmas, I wouldn't be back before the 1st of January 2028, says Tony in Dublin. They work off the Christmas day. Joanne McNally joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Joanne.
Good afternoon.
You are doing your first Vicar Street.
Yes.
And you're on tour with...
Glee Bag. From January, yeah.
From January, right, okay.
So I'm going all over the place.
And you're home for Christmas from London?
I'm home for Christmas, yeah. Yeah. Not now, as I have to go back, but I am coming home for Christmas.
Right.
And I'd be killed if I didn't come home for Christmas.
And things seem to be happening for you in London?
I love London, yeah. It's amazing. And I have my Bite Me show has been commissioned for a Radio 4 show now, so that's exciting. Yeah, and that's ticking along.
That was about your bulimia.
Yeah, I know. I never thought I'd get this long out of it. Kind of glad it happened now.
You're a
sick woman.
It's not terrible.
Best thing that ever happened to me. Launched my career. Who would have thought it?
You can't be flippant about bulimia.
I can't. I did a show about it. Yeah. I was actually talking to someone the other day and I was like, because I get kind of cynical about, which I think I can't decide if I'm just a massive hypocrite or if there's a difference when I do it. But like when I go to Edinburgh and everyone's doing shows about heavy stuff, I'm like, why is it okay for me to do it? But I roll my eyes when I hear someone else talking about the death of their father or their depression. I was like, I think what it is that Bite Me never asks for pity. Like, it's taken the mick out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
It never says, poor me. And I think that's the difference.
And you're out the other side.
I'm out the other side now, yeah, thank God.
Completely?
Yeah, completely, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
No, because I spoke to somebody recently, I can't remember who it was, and even if I could, I probably wouldn't mention their name, about anorexia. And they were saying that they still battle, although it's like 15, 20 years ago since they were in the midst of it.
Oh yeah, you'd still have like mad thoughts. Like you still have, and I would still have to check myself if, like sometimes I get freaked out. Like if I can't lose a pound or else friends are like, there's an intervention of like, okay, are you all right? I always have to go to the toilet before dinners. I cannot go to the bathroom for half an hour after a meal or everyone's like, shh, 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 shh. That will stay with me forever, I'd imagine, because people are watching because of my past.
Yes.
But personally, I feel great. Like even like, I'm totally cool with like putting on weight, losing weight now. I don't get freaked out by it. Like I still think I can leave the house if I put on half a stone. There's great freedom in it. But it's years of like, because it took years to happen, like I didn't just wake up like a bulimic. It took years of kind of like little chip away at your sanity. So it took years to unlearn those behaviours.
And have you done research on it? A bit,
yeah.
Yes. So it hits people oftentimes in the adolescent years,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
And do a lot of people grow out of it?
I don't know. They right. say it's one of the hardest things to recover from. And I would always be aware that, like, if I'm stressed or anything, I would, like, I suppose, react with food. I would eat less food if I'm stressed. Or I have that thing of, like, I can't control the external, so I'll control the internal. So I'll, like, cut my size down and things like that. So I'm still aware, but, like, I'm not, like, binging and purging my meals anymore, which is a great relief to everyone involved in my life.
Yes. And you're saying you're a big fan of Christmas.
Huge fan of Christmas. I love it. I love it so much.
What in particular?
I don't know. I think I'm very suggestible. So like any of the ads and stuff, if they tell me I'm having a lovely time, I believe that I'm having a lovely time. And I love the lights and I love even like the Coca-Cola ads, all that stuff. I love the feeling of it. Mm. Do you know that way?
Warm, cozy,
yeah.
fuzzy.
Yeah. It triggers all those things in my mind. Like I'm an advertiser's wet dream, basically, because I just believe everything they tell me. People get really cynical about Christmas. Like I'd started in October. It kind of does start in October now, doesn't it?
Well, when Halloween is out of the way, they start Christmas. Yeah.
Pure, like love Mariah Carey, like all that jazz, like Christmas jumpers, the whole shebang. I find Christmas Day mind-numbingly boring, and then it picks up again on Stevens's Day.
They need to work on Christmas Day, don't they?
They need to work on Christmas Day. I find I love a game. So like I feel that makes the day. We have we've drink Cosmos on Christmas Day.
Yeah, right.
Because I obviously got into Cosmos because I'm a generation that was raised on Sex and the City, and then I introduced my mother to Cosmos and she has never looked back. She loves the Cosmo. Right. So we make a huge big jug of Cosmo that sits in the fridge. The jug that's usually used for like Kiora. And we sup out of that all day and we play games.
Do you ever get that headband one?
Yes.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one. Yeah. I think we gave my mother Holly Valance, who she's clearly never heard of in her life.
Kiss Holly Valance.
Yeah.
Wow. Where does she know?
The hot Cosmo spilling all over the place. She didn't know who she was. She's married. She married a billionaire businessman.
Is there a celebrity headband thing? Because at home that we have, it's foodstuffs and objects.
You just write them.
We're like, who are you? And they can ask questions
about who they are. I play it in cars as well. If I'm driving to gigs, I'll always play 20 questions. And depending,
you don't have to buy the game.
With.
No, you're right. Just get a packet
just
of post-its.
I'm telling you who you are. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you're the tour Glee bag.
Yeah.
Right. And is it themed or?
Not really, no. It's just kind of what it is to be in your 30s, can't buy houses, will I get Botox, I'm a millennial, am I a snowflake? Right. Questions.
Okay.
Irreverent crack, I would say.
And will you get Botox?
No. Oh, yeah. I mean, of course I will. Yeah. But I'll lie about it.
Right. Do you know who we were watching the other day? And this isn't, well, it's, we were watching Ellie Goulding.
Oh, yeah. I like her.
Yeah. Have you seen her lips?
No, she had the lips done.
Yeah. And then Jenny went and Googled her and she gave an interview to say that she felt she was doing well, but she wasn't getting the covers of magazines that she felt she should have been getting.
And that's why she got her lips done.
Do you know what?
I think that when you see, like, I love a lip. If I could get away with having my lips done, I'd have lips the size of a clubbed seal. Like, I'd go big, right? But you can't because you always know, you always see when someone's had their lips done. And I think when I see someone with their lips done, it makes me think they're insecure.
Yes.
So when Anna Friel, for example, has had her lips done and I can't see past her lips now. Plus, and I won't, like, obviously get into the details of it because of the time we're on, but, like, what are you really, you're kind of just positioning yourself as...
Yeah.
Yes. Really good at a job I don't particularly like.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't see the point in it.
I don't know if that's what Ellie Goulding was thinking when she got them done.
But immediately I feel sorry for them.
Yeah, now, she doesn't care what I think. But so you're not going to get Botox anymore?
No. Well, I'd probably get Botox, but I won't get my lips done.
Okay.
No.
And not being able to afford a house.
I mean, I can't afford a house. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I just have to keep feeding my mum mince pies until she passes on and I take hers. She's like, you've no pension. I'm like, I do. It's you. Like, I'm looking at it. So I'm plying her full of booze and fags. Unless the hope is, because obviously I'm 35, so I was a late starter, as in I had a big career change when I was 30. Which is,
you were in marketing, were you?
Public relations. So I've no, like, pension as such, none of that stuff. So I'm just hoping I make it, or else I'm literally going to be living in a box somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can rent, of course.
But I have this Irish mentality of like,
you
renting,
need to own a home.
I have
yes.
to own a home, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That renting, you do feel like, even now when I rent, it does feel like you're wasting money. And you're
dead
not
money,
wasting
dead money.
Money.
Dead
I
money,
feel like
Jermaine.
I'm paying someone else's mortgage and I'd rather just pay my own.
Yeah. I was chatting to you on the telly about your dad, and we only had a minute to talk about him, so you can fill us in on that. So you're adopted, people will know that.
Yeah.
And you met your biological mother, and then you went about finding your biological dad through Facebook.
Yeah.
And you were successful.
Yeah, I found him. He was the first person, because I look so like him, which made up for the disappointment of when I found my biological mother and I looked nothing like her. So when I put his name into Facebook, he was the first person who came up, and his name's quite common. It just so happened he was the first person who came up, and I was like, oh my God, it was just me, but bald.
Yeah.
That was it. He's the image of me.
And explain to me, I think you might have explained this to me before, why it was so important that he looked like you or you looked like him.
Because I think, and I can't obviously speak for other adopted people, but personally, I felt that looking like someone was your sense of self, as in like it was your sense of belonging. Like that's what anchored you to the world, right. Is knowing visibly, having visible evidence that you came from somebody else.
It anchored you to the world.
That was my understanding of it. So yeah. When people would look like their siblings, I was so jealous, or they'd look like their parents. And mum said that people used to tell her that me and my brother looked like her because they didn't know, they wouldn't have known we were adopted because people see what they want.
Yes,
to see.
Yes.
Or else they just say it because they're making conversation. But like my brother looks Italian. Like we look nothing alike. But in fact, he's adopted as well.
Well yeah.
But we got a painting of us done in France one year on holiday. Like we were kids. Like he's 5 years older than me. And it still hangs in the house. And I laugh every time I see it. We're like twins. We're like identical twins. Your man sketched us on the street, like,
yeah.
And we were like identical twins. And in reality, we don't even look like second cousins. But anyway, so it was massively important to me that I looked like someone, and I felt that that would kind of give me a stronger sense of self. So when I first saw my biological mother's picture, I was devastated because I just she looks actually quite like my mother. I told you this before, I ended up looking up this, I thought that there'd been a mistake in the agency. So now that I had her first name and her surname, I put it into Facebook and found another woman with the same name who was the spitz of me, and she was a painter, and obviously I kind of fancied
myself.
Well,
you prefer
myself.
That.
I fancied that. That was a better story. It fitted my narrative better.
Yes.
And she'd emigrated Ireland in 1983 from Donegal.
It fitted my narrative better.
I was a little deluded and I'd taken a drink at the time. And then she emigrated Ireland in 1983, which is the year I was born. So I assumed that was, you know, from guilt or like whatever. So I started Facebook mailing her, like basically accusing
her. And it wasn't her.
Accusing her of being my mother. No, she was very nice. And she said, no, I'm not.
Now
sorry.
Leave me alone.
Yeah. And then I sent back another letter sending pictures of myself beside herself so that she like couldn't deny it. And then she was like, listen, I don't know what to tell you. Like, so eventually I went back and I was like, right, obviously this woman. I mean, of course, once I got to know my biological mother, we were very similar.
And you've got to know your biological dad.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kevin, yeah.
He's all good.
He's cool. He's sound. He's like, I was saying that he's all like cool. He's very cool. He's a cool dad.
Does he fit in with your narrative?
No, none of them did. I say, like, I wanted to come from like a showbiz. I assumed that like my family is, you know, we're a real normal family. Like my mum's a nurse, my dad was a draftsman, my brother's an accountant. So I wanted the kind of glitz and glamour to come from
your biological side.
Family. But I basically found the exact same thing. So it was like doing my leaving cert a second time and getting the same results. I was like, oh, right, okay. It's literally the exact same family on the other side.
JoanneMcNally.com. People can see where you're gigging all over the country.
Yes.
And then Vicar Street, Friday, April 26th.
Yep.
Do you wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night thinking about Vicar Street? Going on stage and freezing?
No, I don't. I was going to ask you to do the support, right? You wouldn't be into it now. I have stresses around the show for writing the show to make sure that I'm writing. So I've loads and loads and loads of new stuff, which I'll be kind of working out from January. But no, I'm looking forward to it. Like I've been on the Vicar Street stage enough times now that it doesn't feel alien to me, which is a bonus.
You did support, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But it is seen as a rites of passage, isn't it, in Ireland?
Is. Yeah, it's like the Mecca, basically. It's like you're basically promoting yourself.
Yeah.
No one's going to stop you doing a Vicar Street. Well, I suppose Aiken would if they're like, you're not going to sell anything, they probably would stop you. But you are taking a punt on yourself, really.
You're backing yourself, as they say, in sporting terms.
Exactly.
And the thing is that it's a contract with the people who pay money to see you that,
you know,
they have bought the ticket, make me laugh.
Yeah. Well, now I wasn't worried about it, but now I'm getting really worried about it. Right.
But that's what it is, isn't it?
I know. And as well, you're like, I don't want to let them down. You know what I mean? As in, like, a lot of the people, I think, coming maybe won't have seen me do stand-up at all before. So I'm sure there'll be a massive drop-up rate after. Yeah. No, I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be great.
And just the next time you come in, we must talk about changing career as you did in your, what, mid-20s or late 20s?
Late 20s, yeah. Yeah. So I started doing stand-up when I was 31? 31, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. Big change, yeah.
That's a huge change.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I remember, did we meet when you were in your old job? I think you came in and...
I might have been on the other side.
You pitched something. I think you did pitch
something.
Did
I? Probably
Vodafone
wanted to get on
World
the show.
Vodafone World of Difference or something like that.
Well, that was it, like the Vodafone competition I won,
yeah.
I went to work for a mental health charity.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, which sent me a little bit...
What? Right.
Mentally not healthy.
They're
a weird place to work, I think.
Which?
Mental health charities. Because they're a business at the end of the day, you see. You think
that's another day's conversation. Now, I'm not going to start here now. Okay, right.
I'm not flagging mental health.
JoanneMcNally.com. No, but it's an interesting chat. Yeah. JoanneMcNally.com and Vicar Street on Friday, April 26th. Joanne, happy Christmas.
Thank you, Ray. Happy Christmas.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Ham Sandwich, join us in studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Hello.
Niamh, Podge, Darcy, and Kev.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're going to chat after 4 o'clock, but I'll tell them that you're in Whelan's this Saturday night. And then the 23rd, which is the eve of Christmas Eve, you're in the Seth Theatre in Kilkenny. Friday 28th, you're in Roisin, Dublin, Galway. And then Saturday 29th, Dolan's Warehouse in Limerick. And you're going to perform your new single, brand new, it says here, brand new single, Reactions.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm.
Ready?
Yep.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Control myself, don't do nothing else.
That's great.
Thank you.
That's great. Is that the first time you've played it? To a
kind of the first time we've played it acoustically anyway. Yeah, right. You should have heard it an hour ago.
Well, it sounded great. Really sounded
Thank
good.
You.
Reactions. That's the new single from Ham Sandwich. And they're going to stay with us and sing us out on a Christmas song before 4:30. And we'll get to chat then. For the moment, thank you very much.
Thank you.
51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. And you know when somebody asks you about, you know, the programmes of your childhood and the TV programmes that left a long-lasting impression, you hear Wanderley Wagon, you hear The Swap Shop, all of that sort of tiz was. Well, the programme that has left a huge impression on me over the years is That's Life, which used to run on the BBC from 1973 to 1994. And the lady who drove that programme brilliantly was Esther Ranson. And Esther joins us on the line now. Good afternoon, Esther.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thanks so much for taking our call. I know you're a very, very busy woman, so we appreciate your time. So we'll talk about Golden Day and Child Line and Silver Line in a moment, but just That's Life, that brilliant programme. There are rumours going around that it's coming back in some shape or form. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, every now and then, about every 2 or 3 years, somebody tries to make a version of That's Life. And what they usually have no idea is how hard work it is. It's very difficult, actually. So they normally fall in a faint of exhaustion in a puddle.
Yes.
However, a friend of mine who joined That's Life as a researcher when he was 16, then went off to university, then came back again and worked his way steadily up until he ended up executive producing our very last show, has created a new program which is coming back on television on Channel 5, and he has asked me to play a role in it, and I was with him this morning in his production office, and we were just roaring with laughter because it's once we start reminiscing about the crazy things we did on That's Life, as well as, of course, the worthwhile things, we never stop. Mm. So it's a programme which is actually being fronted by Eamon Holmes and his lovely wife, Ruth. And I'm sitting in the corner, if you remember That's Life, I suppose a little bit like Cyril Fletcher.
Yes.
Contributing a bit of a bit of whatever I contribute, which I think is going to be some serious campaigns and some general thoughts about protecting consumers, because it's always been where my heart has been in television, and it's I'm very happy to be back on the screen. It's going to be live on Sunday nights, if you can imagine.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
So Esther Ranson back live on the telly on Sunday nights. That's...
Yeah.
That's
for all those people that want to avoid me, that's where I'll be. Just in case you want to catch up with me, that is also where I'll be.
Yes, and I suppose the brilliant thing for you is you're part of it, but you don't have to work as hard as you would have back in the day.
I'll tell you a secret. If a programme is any good, you can only make it with every sinew, muscle,
yes, I know, yeah,
blood cell. You know, I have a friend called Michael Parkinson, who managed to put his feet up for much of the week and still produce a wonderful show, but he's the only person,
you know, who did it.
He's the only person I've ever met that could do it like that. I mean, most of us, you know, my God, the effort shows, I think, sometimes.
Yes, yeah. So that's Life, and you'll be back in some shape or form on Channel 5, which is great news. You're calling for a golden day in the UK, and oftentimes when something happens in the UK, we copy them or follow suit. Tell us about your idea.
Well, you know, we launched a helpline called the Silver Line in November 2013, so it's just about 5 years old. And we've had well over 2 million calls in that time. And we've got 5,000 trained volunteers making friendship calls and so on. And clearly the demand is enormous. But what it taught me is that it's really difficult to fund charities for older people. I'm not quite sure how you feel in Ireland about charitable causes, but certainly in England, the cancer charities make money and the dog charities make money, but you won't find a single charity helping older people in the top 20. So I thought to myself, well, we've got Children in Need helping children, and very good it is too. And we've got Comic Relief and Sport Relief helping people around the world that need assistance, but we haven't got anything for older people. And all the organisations, the projects working with older people, are finding it really difficult these days with all the cutbacks and this and that. So why don't we have an equivalent to Children in Need on the media, fundraising for all the fantastic people who are doing wonderful work for older people but are finding it very difficult to fund themselves.
Brilliant idea.
So I've been banging on the doors of the various media people to be greeted with a significant silence, because if you say old or older to anyone in television, they clap their hands over their ears and run.
Because they're trying to age down. Isn't that what they say? We're trying to age down.
I'll tell you what, babe. Once upon a time, there was a director general called Greg Dyke.
Yes.
A cheerful chappy in many ways, who stuck stickers all over the BBC saying 16 to 24.
Yeah.
Now, in my view, this is because the advertising agency loves 16 to 24 because they're the only people who believe the commercials. All the rest of us, unfortunately, have been there, done that, got the T-shirt and recognised.
But of course, the BBC don't advertise even.
No, but unfortunately, they went along with the trend. They decided it was cool and fashionable. And so they went along with the trend. Now, this actually annoys me because I know that for a lot of older people, particularly isolated older people, and you do have lots of those in Ireland, I know that.
We do, yes. Yeah,
I know that. They are the people who find television not just a luxury, but a necessity, because sometimes it's the only company they have, the only stimulus they have.
Yeah.
So for the broadcasters, either to take them for granted or ignore them completely, it seems to me to be wrong.
Stupid. Have you manned the Silver Line yourself on occasion, yeah? What sort of things do people say to you, ask you?
Well, I make phone calls every Christmas to people who are not talking to anyone else over the whole Christmas period. And I find it heartbreaking. You know, I've listened to a lot of children talking about a lot of terrible things on Childline's lines, but somehow it's not quite so heartbreaking. It does make you angry if they're being abused or neglected, but children, there's always hope and resilience, and it's a very different experience. When you're talking to older people who tell you that they aren't talking to anyone else, not from Christmas through to New Year, who tell them they don't get any Christmas cards. We try and send them little parcels of goodies. It's quite funny because older people are quite rightly suspicious when a parcel arrives unasked at their door. We always try and make it a surprise, so all kinds of altercations break out. I never ordered this. You know, we have to say, look, 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 your name's on it. Anyway, I think that the two words I hear most often and hate to hear both begin with B. One is busy. Everybody's so busy. My son's so busy. My daughter's so busy. The neighbours are always busy. People in the shops are busy. So no one has time even to pick up a phone and have a chat. And the other is burden. Oh, I don't want to tell my son, my daughter, my friends, my neighbours that I'm feeling lonely because I don't want to be a burden. Okay, so those are the two B words we hear most often, busy and burden. Everyone else is busy, I don't want to be a burden.
It's very sad, isn't it?
It's not right. It's not right. And if you...
You've given this a lot of thought, Esther, and you know, it's all ahead of us. We're all going to get old, and we would like to think that we've contributed some more than others. You've contributed in a huge way. All people contribute in some small way to life, to society, and then at the end of all of that, to be ignored and to feel like a burden. Why is that human nature? I don't think it is, because in other countries. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a young man from Pakistan, for example, and their culture involves caring for their elders. If you don't have, you know, a grandfather or a grandmother of your own, you go out and you find an old person and you befriend them and you help them and you provide company for them. So what is it about, because we're very similar to the UK, I think, in here in Ireland. What do you think? Why is it like that?
Well, I think it's the unintended consequence of the 60s. The swinging 60s, I can remember them, so clearly I wasn't there. But what that did was the young people who, you know, the phrase was children, young people should be seen and not heard. So young people were not really listened to. I remember a time when in the BBC where I was working, it was the older people that had all the senior jobs. And it was famous that you can never sack them, you know. They were there, they clung on like elderly limpets. Not anymore. I tell you, I was the oldest person in my department at the BBC. They lopped them off, you know, at the age of 40. God knows where they ended up. But I think the unintended consequence of the youth culture was that older people who had been respected, not only in employment but in families, they were very often the centre of the family, as my grandmother was. Everybody circled around her home, and we saw her every weekend, and Christmas we all came to her and had a big Christmas dinner and went for a walk together, all the cousins. Those were the days of the extended family. And I think we have lost a heck of a lot. You know, partly it's because we've had to, as Norman Tebbit, I think, said, get on our bikes to go where the work is. My sister, there's only the two of us, my sister and I, and she's in Australia. So, you know, 12,000 miles away. My cousins are scattered. One's in New Zealand, one's in Somerset. Sadly, I haven't got any in Ireland. I'd certainly leap at the chance of visiting them if I had. I once pursued slightly by an Irish lawyer.
Oh, were you? Not for legal reasons, for love reasons.
Thank you. Well, it was professional reason, really. It was on a programme called Celebrity First Date.
Oh, yes, you were on Celebrity First Dates. You've done The Jungle, and you've done Strictly. Yeah. And how did that work out then, you and the Irish solicitor?
He was adorable, but unfortunately, after we'd had our lunch together, we were then interviewed about each other, and I was, you know, rather bland and sweet, as I try to be when the cameras are on. you know, we have to be on our best behaviour. Anyway, then they turned to him and said, what did he think of me? Yeah. And he said, well, Esther, for a lady of your advancing years, you were splendid company.
Oh, God.
I know.
And did he patch on the head then? Go on.
I said, what did you say? And he said, didn't you hear me, dear?
Oh, no.
So then I was rung up by a gentleman of your persuasion, an important broadcaster on Irish radio, who tried to make the case that it was a joke. I said, now listen to me, I said, you never make a joke about a lady's age or her shoe size or her weight. Anyway, so that didn't work out.
No.
Charming chap.
Now, you see, because your beloved Des, and when you read about your relationship, it was just a beautiful, loving relationship. And even that, I read somewhere that you slept with your arms around each other. So when you lose somebody like that, there is a huge gap in your life. And when you went on to Celebrity First Dates, it was just for a bit of fun, or were you looking?
Blandishments. I was blandished into it because they said to me, now look, there's a lot of people, including people who ring the Silver Line, this helpline for older people we run, who are actually looking for love again. They've lost a partner. And if you come on this show, you'll make it respectable. Not that I normally make things respectable, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
And so I was blandished into it.
Right. Hoodwinked. And, yeah.
But, you know, if the right person had come along, I wouldn't say no. But it's just, Desi was a fantastically hard act to follow.
Yeah. We mentioned I'm a Celebrity there. You still hold the record for staying in a coffin for 47 minutes with cockroaches.
I really do. I do.
You're a strong, determined woman. You know, if you can do that, I don't know how you did that. Why did you sign up for it? You hardly needed the money.
It was a very funny occasion because they came to see me and my agent, and my agent, who was a beautiful blonde, a highly refined woman. Interesting, isn't it? God knows how she put up with me, but anyway, she did. And she was getting more and more and more disgusted and disdainful, and the whole thing, you know. And she was looking, You know, I hope she's not hearing me. You know how ostriches have that disdained look?
Yes.
Disdainful look. Well, she was a bit like that. Her neck grew and she looked down her nose in a slightly ostrich-like way. I've never said that to her. Please don't pass it on.
I probably never meet her. Most likely.
You never know. These things happen. Anyway, the more appalled she got, the funnier I thought it was.
Yeah.
And as I'm rather contra-suggestible, I thought, well, it would be fun. Also...
That's a brilliant... Can I use that? Counter-suggestible. Yes, there
yeah,
you go.
Indeed.
Yes,
yeah, yeah. And my my closest friend adores the programme and watches it, you know, avidly. I tend not to, although I did watch the final this year.
Harry Redknapp, what a star. Both my 12-year-old daughter and my wife have a crush on him.
You see, I tell you about these reality shows. If you know who's going to win from the beginning, it sort of spoils it.
Yes.
And there was something about Harry, this star quality that shone from the screen. It was something to do with his grumpiness can be quite appealing, can't it? Particularly when faced with disgusting things to eat. But I have this problem with Strictly, you know. There are two dancers, lovely women, who are professional dancers on it.
Yeah.
And that sort of spoils it, doesn't it?
It does. I thought there were rules, but obviously there aren't rules. But I thought there were.
I've invented a very good rule, which is what they ought to do. It's a bit like education. You know how they judge schools by value added, i.e. they measure what the kids are like when they begin and how far they travel when they leave. Mm. Do you see what I mean? And that's measuring...
Ah, yes, they should do that. That should be
progress.
The measure. Yes, that should be the measure. Yes, yes,
that's
yes.
That's what it
yes,
should be,
yes.
So that you get these amateurs who've never danced a step in their lives who turn out to be very proficient by the end, but they can't compete with live young ladies who've been doing it from the age of four.
No, it's unfair. It's unfair.
I'm pleased you say that.
Yeah, listen, if you're ever in Dublin, will you come in for a chat? Because I'd love to have you sitting in front of me.
Well, that would be fun. One of my favourite cities in the whole world, Dublin.
Yeah, well, you come over and we will try and get you a different solicitor who's a more mannerly solicitor next time.
Yes, yes. Well, yes, I find the Irish people a bit difficult to resist.
Right.
Yeah, it's the music and the humour.
Yeah. Listen, I've really enjoyed our chat. Mind yourself, and if you get the Golden Day going in the UK, you might come over and do it here as well.
Yeah, sure, that would be fun.
Great. Esther Anson, thank you very much. Happy
pleasure.
Christmas. Bye now.
And bye. To you. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551. What a lovely lady, Esther Anson, and very funny as well. On Joanne McNally, I love listening to Joanne, so madcap and sensible all at one time. Love her talks on Adoption 2, says, you go girls, that person remains nameless. And here's a song for your list. Vince Vance and the Valiants sing a song called All I Want for Christmas Is You. Same name as Mariah Carey's song, but a totally different song. It gets played a lot on radio here in New York. I looked it up. That's from Carol. Happy Christmas, Carol. And the song Jerusalem with Joseph Lockerbie was always played by my dad, RIP, on the record player at Christmas. It always was a great song. Happy Christmas, Mary. I looked that up as well, Mary. Thank you for that. And a Scotsman living in Ireland, your Irish Maris Pipers make magnificent chips. Irish Roosters come a close second. I double cook mine. Now, if we can only get you to spell whiskey properly, says Ian, a Scotsman living in Ireland. Ham Sandwich, you're back in studio.
Yeah.
And you're going to sing a Christmas song for us. Do you have a favourite, Niamh, Christmas song?
Christmas song, I love The River, Joni Mitchell.
Oh yes, it's coming on Christmas.
Fantastic song. Yeah.
Podge?
Yeah, I don't really have a favourite, but the Chris de Burgh one terrifies the life out of me.
Spaceman Came Travelling.
Yeah, it's just very strange.
Darcy, what's your?
The Slade one, It's Christmas. The guy, he's shouting at the end.
Yeah, so Noddy Holder.
Yeah, I love that one.
Noddy! So, here it is. He's a DJ, I think, in Birmingham. Noddy Holder, yeah, I think so. Well, he was the last time I Googled him. Yeah. Kev, what about you?
It's got to be Little Donkey.
No, it's not.
I just remember from the Nativity.
Yeah, the Little Nativity play. Dustin has
some great Christmas.
Yeah, they had the Christmas tree. He did a version of Christmas tree, which is great. Now, the one you've chosen to do for us today is White Christmas.
Yes.
The Dustin version.
The Dustin version.
How are you?
I just tell people, in case you run out of time, you're in Whelan's this Saturday. It's part of your winter residency. How posh is that? You're there on Thursday and Friday, but they're sold out. Saturday, some tickets still available. And then Set Theatre in Kilkenny on Sunday, 23rd of December, Friday, 28th, Roisin Dubh, and Saturday, 29th, Dolan's Warehouse in Limerick. And I suppose people coming home from all over the world will be going to see you. That's the lovely thing, isn't
hopefully.
It? Yeah, that's, well, that's the plan, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Okay, ham sandwich and what?
It'll be like, hello, New York.
White Christmas.
Yes. You ready?
Okay. Just one, trying to two. Make Darcy uneasy here. Sleep out there. Very sorry about that.
No,
get back to work.
That is so that was so lovely. It's so gentle and relaxing and cozy and Christmassy and warm and fuzzy and all those things. So thank you very much for that. And happy thank Christmas, you. Ham
happy
sandwich.
Christmas.
Happy Christmas, ham sandwich.
Thanks, Maria.
Not like a ham sandwich over Christmas, yeah. And be careful with the bubble bath. People will get that. It's from the beginning of the show. Now, that's it from us. Mary Wilson's on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.